draw near and give their attention to the court is now sitting. God save the United States and the honorable court. Be seated, please. Case number 063162, et al. United States of America versus Sean Daniel Holmes. Mr. Lee for appellant, Ms. Hitler for appellant, and Stokey for appellate.
Ms. Hitler, did you want to go first or did you want to reverse the order?
Yes, Your Honor. I will be going first. May it please the court. My name is Yolanda Hibbler, pro bono counsel for appellant Kevin L. Jefferson. I would like to request 1 minute of time for a rebuttal. We are here today because the government seeks to relitigate a count in the indictment for which appellate Jefferson has previously been acquitted. The main issues for the court to consider today are the factual findings of the jury in the first trial and the government's case. At the first trial, the government introduced evidence regarding three discrete drug amounts. The first amount was 0.7 grams.
I'm confused by the way you started. My understanding is that Mr. Jefferson, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That Mr. Jefferson was convicted of possession with intent to distribute a detectable amount of cocaine base, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And my understanding is that's what the government wants to charge him with. Is that wrong?
That is wrong, Your Honor. Essentially, what's happening at the retrial is that the government is going to try Jefferson a second time for the case that it presented the first time.
Well, forget about the cases. What is the charge that they're going to charge him with? The court said that he couldn't be charged with 50 grams or 150 grams, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the only thing he'll be charged with is a detectable amount, right?
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct. He will be charged with
detectable. I'm not sure. He was convicted of a detectable amount. You
yes,
appealed. You go back for a new trial. Whenever that happens, the government is certainly entitled to retry the person on the ground on the charge that you appealed, right?
Right, Your Honor.
So what's wrong here?
Well, what we're arguing today or what is here today is the holding that's in Price as well as the holding that is in Mayo. The Price Court acknowledges the fact that the government can come back again a second time,
right.
But on that second time, they can't try the case that they tried the first time. We are asserting that the government will, at the second retrial, at the retrial, present the same evidence, the same liability.
You're talking about evidence.
We're talking about the case, the theories of liability, the issues that the jury made a factual finding about.
If it's the evidence, we can't be talking to each other today because that would be an interlocutory.
That is barred on an interlocutory. I agree, Your Honor. What we're talking.
So the only thing we can talk about today is a double jeopardy claim with respect to the charge, right?
Right.
And the judge has said that she'll only permit trial on the charge of a detectable amount, right?
She says that she will allow it on a detectable amount, but she also right. says, I believe it's on page 33 and
right.
34
right.
of the tab 5 government joint appendix right. that they can proceed on a theory of aiding and abetting. And based on that theory of liability.
I didn't see you challenging the aiding and abetting part. I thought that was the other defendant.
Well, no, actually in our brief, I believe it's on page 5 or 6, we specifically reference the note that the government cites, and we say that necessarily included in count two and requesting to dismiss it in its entirety, that all theories, either as a direct or as an aider and abettor, are precluded on the second trial.
And you're saying that the theory of liability can't be charged?
Yes, Your Honor. We're saying that it can't be introduced a second time under Pettaway as well as under Mayo.
Well, Mayo's
when you say introduced, you're not referring to evidence now.
Well, indirectly, there would be some overlap. We're saying that the government cannot come to the trial and introduce a theory of liability suggesting that Jefferson aided and abetted Ginyard as far as the evidence that was in the car. As far as the evidence that was in the car, that was 134.5 grams.
Do you really want to focus on evidence and evidence alone?
No, we're not trying to focus on evidence alone. We're talking about the theory of liability.
Okay. As reflected in what, if not the evidence?
As reflected in the case that the government will present.
So that's the evidence. What else?
As far as the witnesses?
Well, to take an example, in the case under review, there was a verdict form. And the verdict form asked about liability with regard to aiding and abetting.
Yes, Your Honor.
I presume you don't want that to happen.
Correct, Your Honor.
Is there anything else like that?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I didn't completely understand the question.
Is there anything other than the evidence that you were that
there's the indictment
in this trial?
Yes, Your Honor. There's the indictment. The court refused to. The indictment has yet to be amended to reflect the charges that are supposed to be that are currently against Jefferson right now. The indictment still reads 50 grams or more of crack cocaine.
The district, maybe the district court's a little unclear at this point, but the district court did rule that you couldn't be charged with the 50 and 150 grams, right?
She did rule that he could not be, that the government could not proceed on that, but it still is on the same indictment.
Well, we don't know yet, I guess, what's going to happen. I assume for the moment that what normally happens in these cases happens in this case, which is either the indictment's redacted or it's superseded and only goes to detectable amount. Then do you have an objection?
Yes, we would argue the holding that's currently in Mayo right now, which is that if the trial is...
Mayo, first of all, that's a New York case.
That is a New York case, Your Honor.
And that's a case in which originally the jury was told of the 50 gram and of the larger offense, right?
Right.
And it was only partway through the trial that the court withdrew that.
Correct, Your Honor.
So I'm asking you to assume that the district court here doesn't do that. Instead, starts from the very beginning. The defendant has been charged with possession with intent to distribute undetectable amount of cocaine.
Yes.
Would that be okay with you?
It would not.
Why
because
not?
Because of what's identified in Correas, that even if the indictment was never mentioned, the trial would be, it would be tried under the shadow of the original indictment.
The shadow case, which is the Mayo case.
Which is the Mayo case.
The reason they said it was a shadow was because the jury was told of the greater offense at the beginning of the trial.
And because it was tried under the same count, the government presented the theory of, they presented a case of robbery. What we're afraid of here is that the government will equally present a case of 50 grams or more of crack cocaine.
If they do that, then you'll be able to complain about that later. The question is, what are you allowed to complain about at this stage in interlocutory?
Well, if they present the same case that they presented the first time, that is exactly what the double jeopardy clause is to preclude. It's to preclude Jefferson from being retried a second time for the same crime that he was previously tried. So if we go to court a second time and the government goes and they present the exact same case they present at the same time with the same witnesses, with the same case.
So you want to limit the witnesses and the evidence?
We want to limit the case that they presented the first time. We don't want them to proceed on that same case.
When you say the case, you mean the witnesses and the evidence?
The theories of liability, what they presented the first time.
Well, do you want them to not be able to say that in argument that they're responsible for the stuff in the trunk, or you want them not to be able to put on evidence about the stuff in the trunk, or what?
In the indictment, in argument,
so the indictment,
in instruction.
By my hypothetical, the indictment's solved. Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
In argument.
Yeah.
In the summary at the end.
Right. So those are all things that we can't talk about today because those aren't the charge. Those would be the argument. Maybe there'll be a wrong argument. Maybe there'll be a right argument. But those are things that we would talk about after a conviction.
Correct, Your Honor.
Let me ask you about the, you know, whether there really was an acquittal on this count. I'm still a little confused by this on the 50 grams. The reason that you think that you were acquitted of the greater amount is really because the foreman wrote in detectable amount. Is that right?
Yeah, it's based on the, yes, Your Honor, it's based on the verdict form and based on the hearing where the jury specifically asked the court if it could strike out that amount and if it could replace it with a lesser.
So that argument is different than Ginyard's argument, right, which doesn't have that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And also a little just on the jury itself. So the court allowed the 11 one of the people to leave, so you ended up with an 11-person jury, and that was vacated.
Yes, Your
right?
Honor.
So why does that leave anything at all? Why I appreciate that that's not quite at issue here because the government's not arguing it here. But why doesn't that just leave nothing rather than an acquittal?
Are you saying why does the jury factual determination,
why does the jury's factual determination matter since it was a wrongly composed jury to begin with?
Well, I think the government concedes this point at point five, but they also cite both Green versus United States and Price versus Georgia, which essentially says that, and as well as Petaway, which essentially says that even after there's been a conviction, you can come back a second time, and that jury's determination is given validity.
So imagine that instead of the jury deciding this there was only one person left in the jury, and that one person acquitted on one count and not on the other. Would that bind the court on the next proceeding, the next hearing? Or would the whole thing be wiped out? We'd have to start over again.
If I understand Your Honor's question, I would assume that any jury's factual determination would go forward, be it 11, be it 5, or be it 1.
What if the judge flipped a coin?
Well, that would not be a jury's finding. I would assume.
Right. It's conceded by the government, but I just was unclear about what the argument for it was. The argument is just that having a wrongly composed jury is the same as having any other kind of court error in the district court? Is that
yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I've gone over my time.
Yes, we'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mayor, good morning. I'm here to argue on behalf of Mr. Ginyard, essentially the issue of whether or not Mr. Ginyard should be retried under the theory of aiding and abetting. And of course, our position is that he should not be retried under aiding and abetting. Excuse me. The logic behind our argument is simply this: the jury form, based on the jury form, the verdict form, it is not reasonable that the jury could find that Mr. Ginyard is responsible for more than 150 grams and Mr. Jefferson is responsible for the other 21.1 they could find.
This is the part that I think is differs between you and your co-defendant here. Obviously, if there had been a hung jury, your argument is that with respect to the hubcap, you were acquitted. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's essentially it.
Right. But if there had been a hung jury, if there was a separate issue and with respect to the hubcap and it was a hung jury, you could certainly be retried on that, right?
If it were a hung jury to that particular count, yes.
Right. Okay. So your argument is that it's not a hung jury but an acquittal with respect to the 150 grams, right?
Yes, Your Honor, it's not hung. It is, in fact, a determination by the jury that he did not possess more than 150 grams.
Right, and I'm having a difficulty understanding that argument from the nature of the verdict form. So the verdict form says, as to count two, with intent to distribute 50 grams or more, how do you find? And they found you guilty, right? At least, so it's 50 grams or more, right? And it says guilty. Then it says, if you're finding as to count two, then you must answer one of the following questions, right? You go on to the next question. With respect to the 150, there's a space for proven, which would be a unanimous guilty verdict, right?
Yes.
A space for not proven, which would be a unanimous not guilty verdict. That would be an acquittal.
Yes.
Neither of those are filled out.
Yes.
So if the jury were trying to figure out what to do if it hung on 150 grams, why wouldn't it do exactly what it did do, which is not fill out either of those two spaces?
Well, it's essentially, it's a step-by-step process I think the jury went through. And the jury said, we find 150 grams under a theory of aiding and abetting.
Well, how do you know that? All we have is the form. The form leaves two openings, and if they wanted to acquit you of 150 grams, which would establish your claim with respect to the hubcap, they would have marked not proven. In fact, the next sentence says, if you are unable to find unanimously that the quantity of cocaine base was at least 150 grams, then you should consider, and then it tells you to go on.
Yes.
Right? And then they did go on.
Correct. The way that you come to that conclusion is this. The only evidence presented against Mr. Ginyard directly was the 134.5 grams that was found in the Cadillac. The only way the jury could get to 150 grams would be to add in the amount that Mr. Jefferson had in the hubcap. Therefore, if you look at it that way, it's got to be under a theory of aiding and abetting.
Well, but I'm asking, how do you know they didn't hang as to the Cadillac?
Well, we don't know.
Hang as to the hubcap.
We don't know. That's the problem.
Well, if you don't know, I thought the Supreme Court's cases say the burden is on the defendant to show that they were acquitted.
Well, if you look at it, you don't know ultimately what they decided. The burden on the defendant in this case is to demonstrate that they decided something and that something was different than what's going on. And that's kind of mental gymnastics at this point, but essentially yes, if the jury makes a finding or doesn't make a finding, they made a finding based on all the evidence. The evidence was 134.5 to Mr. Ginyard and the 21.1 to Mr. Jefferson. If you look at that as a whole, then they must have found that there was at least 150 grams. The only way to get to 150 grams is that Mr. Ginyard is given responsibility for the 21.1 grams. At that point, it's a done deal. Now, whether or not they hung, when the court says whether they hung, I'm presuming
that means they were unable to decide unanimously whether he did it or he didn't do it with respect to the hubcap.
And that's, I took the argument differently. You mean that maybe the jury came to a compromise verdict?
No. When I say hung, I mean they were unable to reach unanimous verdict either of guilty or of not guilty.
Well, in that particular case, I don't think that's an option because they did find more than 150 grams. They must have found the 21.1, otherwise they don't get to the 150.
Well, hold on. With respect to your client, they found more than 150 grams? At least on the verdict that says 50 grams.
It's
not
50 grams, correct.
So they didn't either find or not find. They didn't fill out the form with respect to the 150 grams.
Okay, I understand. Excuse me. What the jury does is it jumps down step by step in the verdict form. They're not instructed to find not guilty to the top particular, how do I put that? They're instructed to find guilty or not guilty, and then they come down the form, and in this particular case, they find, I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's very confusing.
It's hard to refocus on the verdict form again, but essentially come down and they say he's not guilty of the 50. It's not rational, I guess, is my position, to start guessing what they're saying.
It's also not allowed.
Correct.
Green against the United States, a Supreme Court case in 57, tells us that if the jury's silent on a charge, a lesser included charge, then it's acquitted.
Correct. In this particular case, I think the logic would work.
If it convicts on a lesser included charge, it's acquitted on the greater if it's silent.
Correct. That's what I'm trying to get.
But on the Green case, they didn't have a jury in a form like this one. They didn't give the options of not guilty and guilty.
That's true, but the same logic applies. The options are, in other words, the ultimate decision is the same, guilty or not guilty, acquitted or not acquitted.
And in the Shiro case, which came after the Green case, came in 1994, the court found that even though they had failed to return a verdict at all on count one, the court didn't regard that as an acquittal. The court regarded that as a hung jury.
I think the facts were a little different, but ultimately I think what the court was saying was that when there was no finding of the top count and the facts were a bit different in the lesser included count, then that's when you get to the position.
So they regarded the top count as hung?
Well, I don't think they said that. I think they said they decided it wasn't decided, and I think that's different than not hung.
Not decided and therefore could be recharged again.
I think the facts were different in that case and they're escaping me at the moment, but I remember that there was a distinction there, and as I recall it, I thought the distinction was that essentially they can't not represent or force the defendant to re-defend against the same facts. without getting into what those facts were, the principle is the same, and that is that Mr. Ginyard and Mr. Jefferson, well, Mr. Ginyard should not be required to go through this again when the jury has made that determination. And I think what the court was saying was that because the upper count in that particular case was different, then it wasn't the same as sending him through the process all over again.
You say that the jury had to have found no aiding and abetting between the two, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, you were convicted on the first count of distribution, right?
Yes.
And so was your co-defendant.
Yes.
But your defendant didn't actually do the distribution himself, did he?
He did not, but the way that that happens often is under the theory of the aiding and abetting, they both get charged for the same thing.
Right. That's right. So on the first count, in fact, he was found guilty of aiding and abetting with respect to drugs, right? Your client motioned to the undercover officer, told him to go over to Jefferson.
That's
Jefferson
right.
Is the actual person who did the distributing.
Yes, that's
so
correct.
The only way your client actually could have been convicted on count one was if he aided and abetted in a distribution, right?
Yes.
Right.
That's correct.
And that distribution came out of the hubcap.
Well,
that was the evidence before the jury, that Jefferson took the drugs out of the hubcap and gave it to the undercover officer, right?
That's correct, but the problem, I guess, with that is, or the problem that I had with that, was ultimately what was the jury saying in terms of, what did the jury believe with regard to aiding and abetting and the distribution? They had to find, in that particular case, that Mr. Ginyard was guilty of distribution of drugs, but it was very confusing at that point given the evidence that came in. And so without arguing the evidence, but arguing in terms of what they're confronting at this particular time, the jury didn't necessarily find that Mr. Ginyard was, I guess, aiding and abetting in the distribution of, how do I put this, of crack, but not necessarily what was in the hubcap, given the evidence that came in at the trial, and without arguing more about that, if that makes sense.
Let me just ask one more question.
Sure.
Your position is that your client can be retried as a principal with respect to possession with intent to distribute more than 50 grams, right?
As a principal, yes.
So the only thing you're arguing about is that there can't be an instruction about aiding and abetting? Is that
correct?
Right? Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I see my time is up, and without more, thank you. We would ask that the court instruct the court below that the instruction of aiding and abetting not be given in this case. Thank you.
May it please the court. Mary Chris Dobie on behalf of the government. Mr. Jefferson may be prosecuted for the lesser included offenses of count two. The first jury found him guilty of possession with the intent to distribute at least 20 grams of crack cocaine. He faces retrial for possession with the intent to distribute 5 grams or more and or a detectable amount of crack cocaine. Therefore, he does not face a second trial for an offense for which he has been acquitted.
I take it there's no dispute that when you get back to the district court, you're either going to redact this indictment or supersede, right?
Your Honor, the government's position is that the original indictment is sufficient.
I know what your position is. My question is, and it goes to the shadow over the case, which whether or not we would follow Mayo, they've made an argument about. You don't expect to be telling the jury that he was originally charged with 50 grams. You don't intend to send back to the jury the indictment, which shows 50 grams. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So the only thing the jury will know is that he's been that he's being charged and tried with a crime of a detectable amount. Is that right?
And or 5 grams or more.
Grams or more. But it will not be 50 grams.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Why wouldn't you seek a new indictment?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Why wouldn't you seek a new indictment?
Because...
Amend the indictment. Isn't that what the case law suggests is appropriate in these circumstances?
Well, Your Honor, in this circumstance, the grand jury, which returned the original indictment on count two, necessarily found probable cause to believe that all of the essential elements of the lesser-included offenses, in this case, a detectable amount and 5 grams or more, were met. And therefore, the government, the original indictment is sufficient in this case, and the government may proceed on the lesser.
No, but that's not my question. My question is not whether what you'd like to retry him on can be teased out of the indictment. It's whether you can proceed on an indictment that includes parts that you clearly cannot proceed on.
Your Honor, the government's position is that in this case, the government may proceed. Maybe I'm not understanding the court's question, but the government can proceed based upon the original indictment on the two lesser included offenses. However, as Judge Garland noted, the government has no intention of proceeding on the 50 grams or more.
Well, you can't.
In contempt. Correct, Your Honor.
And the court could later conform the indictment, could it not, to the evidence?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking, because the government seems to be resisting that notion. And then you really do have a potential cloud that shouldn't be there. Why isn't the indictment either conformed, or why don't you seek a new indictment that correctly states what the charge is?
Well, Your Honor, that
this indictment is over-inclusive.
Well, Your Honor, that can be corrected before the trial proceeds on retrial.
How is it going to be corrected? What do you have in mind?
Well, Your Honor, the indictment can be amended to include only the lesser-included offenses before the trial begins.
I thought you agreed with me that's what you were going to do. You're either going to amend it by superseding, or you're going to amend it by correcting it, having the court, as Judge Edwards said, conform it or redact the 50-gram part, right?
That is what the government intends to do. Maybe the government misunderstood Judge Edwards' question,
that's
but that
I'm
is...
what I'm trying to figure out.
Yes, that is what the government intends to do, Your Honor.
Could you... I'm confused on the government's position with respect to... you're smiling. You know why I'm confused? With respect to the implied acquittal?
I'm just happy you're confused.
Do you know why I'm confused?
As to the implied acquittal?
Yeah. I'm confused because in footnote 5, you say that silence is an implied acquittal with respect to Jefferson. But on pages 30 and thereafter, you say that silence is not implied acquittal with respect to Ginyard.
And I think, Judge Garland, you mentioned the Shiro case, which I think explains the government's position on this.
Okay.
And that is that silence by acquittal applies where the defendant seeks to have an entire charge dismissed. Here, Mr. Ginyard seeks to have the aiding and abetting theory of liability, which is a collateral estoppel claim, essentially. And Shiro says that silence by acquittal does not apply to collateral estoppel claims. The government may still proceed against Mr. Ginyard on the 50 grams or more of crack cocaine. As to his theory about aiding and abetting and theories of liability, the government's position is that the silence by acquittal doctrine has no application to a collateral estoppel claim of that sort.
Well, I have to say I hadn't read Shiro as distinguishing and as being based on the fact of it being collateral estoppel. You think that's what distinguishes Shiro and Green, is that one is collateral estoppel and one's not?
Yes, Your Honor. In Shiro...
Why is that? In each one, in Shiro, there was an entire count that was just left silent, and the court and the jury convicted on the other count. Why is that collateral estoppel?
Well, Your Honor, in Shiro, the court's language about the doctrine of silence by acquittal comes at the end of the opinion. Shiro is considering whether evidence can be used at the sentencing proceeding in the death penalty case. So it's not entirely, it's a little bit distinct because this is a separate trial on the exact same offense, where Shiro was considering what evidence could be introduced at a sentencing proceeding.
Aiding and abetting is not evidence. It's a theory of liability, right? And why would that be covered by double jeopardy rather than collateral stuff?
Well, Your Honor,
there may be evidence of aiding and abetting, but aiding and abetting is not a matter of evidence. It's a theory of liability, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, something as to which the defendant was convicted, was acquitted.
Well, Your Honor, we refer to it as a theory of liability in our brief. I mean, I don't contest that it is a theory of liability. However, he still faces retrial on the count of possession with the intent to distribute 50 grams or more of crack cocaine.
Well, the whole thing, this case is incredibly odd, right? Because He was convicted of that account. So, of course, the jury couldn't have found him innocent of that account. Which, now, on the other hand, if he had originally been charged only with aiding and abetting and had been acquitted, he could not be retried as a principal, right?
Yes.
So this is the best they can, the most that can be argued is a collateral estoppel theory. Because they would be, if they were trying to argue a res judicata theory, they'd be stuck because there's already been a conviction. This is a very odd case, I must say.
Counsel said,
I think you're all quite right. It's very difficult to follow what exactly happened. And partly this is because this was a pre-Booker case in which both sides are trying to get a jury verdict form that answers every issue that would otherwise be a sentencing issue. And maybe it shows the problems that we had in between Apprendi and Booker.
And some of which at least will be ironed out with a new indictment.
Yeah.
If the court has no further questions.
Let me, your view with respect to Ginyard is that we can't hear the case because it's an interlocutory appeal with respect to a count, with respect to part of a count, right?
That is correct. That is the government's position.
And with respect to Jefferson, because it is a count, we are entitled to hear that case. That is, we have jurisdiction to hear that case.
That is the distinction the government is making, Your Honor.
Okay.
If the court has no further questions, the government would seek dismissal of Mr. Ginyard's claims on the jurisdictional issue. And alternatively, if the court does find jurisdiction, seek affirmance of the district court's order regarding both appellants.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors. This is the first time that we were made aware that the government, or rather the government has conceded that it would amend the indictment at the retrial. At no point prior were we aware of this position. And in particular, we note at note 7 of the government's opposition brief that it says, and it cites Correa's for the position, that it could prosecute for a lesser included offense without obtaining an indictment. So we merely seek that if the court thinks that this satisfies the double jeopardy issue in this case, we request that the court identify this in its order.
I think that's a very fair point. I assume the government is operating the way it does because this is very standard. When this normally happens, before the trial begins, both sides ask the judge to edit the indictment, and it's done. And I think that the district court was obviously operating on that assumption that that's what she would do, but I agree it wasn't made clear. And however this is resolved, if it were to resolve in the way you're discussing, we would note that, but the government has no objection to that.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And I should say, and would not change its position even if we did not put that in the order.
Yeah.
Trust.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you for asking that, though.
I was not granted the minute of rebuttal because of the order of argument, but I would appreciate 30 seconds. I wanted to address, Judge Garland, your question regarding the aiding and abetting under the distribution in the top count. And I think that what could have happened is the jury could have said he aided and abetted the small amount that was sold to the undercover officer that evening. And I think that that's where the jury may have said aiding and abetting, if at all. Mm-hmm. Of course, our position is that they didn't, and just it came out the way it did. But essentially, that's our rebuttal. Mm-hmm. I think the court had a question.
Yeah. Since you agree that you can be retried on this count, I guess I'm having difficulty with this interlocutory jurisdiction here. How can we have jurisdiction, since the point of the rare exception for an interlocutory appeal before the trial is over in a double jeopardy case is to prevent the trial from happening at all? Yes. And since your trial is going to happen, as you concede, regardless, why shouldn't we wait until after the trial before we consider your claim that aiding and abetting would violate, an aiding and abetting theory would violate double jeopardy?
Well, in this particular case, in all cases, when a case is sent back not to be tried at all, the point is not to put the defendant at jeopardy again related to the issue. In this case, it's not just a technical interlocutory appeal issue where you say, well, you get an interlocutory appeal in this case and not in this case. The purpose of why you get the interlocutory appeal is what's important. And why do you get the interlocutory appeal? And that's because you don't want to put somebody in this position again if you don't have to.
But the position is to be retried again for the same offense, and you agree you can be tried for the offense. The offense is possession with intent to distribute, 50 grams or more.
Yes.
There are different theories about why you might be liable, constructive possession, joint enterprise, aiding and abetting, etc. But you don't doubt that you can be retried for that offense, right?
For the offense itself. And I think one thing we may be missing in this is that the indictment actually indicates aiding and abetting within the count itself. So technically, then we are talking about retrying the offense itself. Although, because what would happen when the indictment was redone is that it wouldn't be under theory, it wouldn't be count one, I forget the actual numbers to the statute, but it wouldn't be count one, distribution, aiding and abetting in the same count. It's simply going to say distribution.
Well, if it says that, and if the government gets an instruction on aiding and abetting, then the government is taking a considerable risk. The government is taking a risk that what looks like a relatively straightforward case, where they might get a conviction on possession with intent to distribute, will become a case in which, if it turns out you're right about aiding and abetting, that you will win, and that will be the end of the case. Because if it turns out that aiding and abetting was barred by double jeopardy, we won't be able to tell whether it was conviction on aiding and abetting or conviction on the other, and we'll have to vacate the case.
That's true, but as the court points out, it would be the government taking the risk. And in this, what we try to do is make it so the defendant doesn't have to take the risk again. And so my argument is quite simply, why make the defendant take the risk when we don't have to? Because we have this opportunity at this point for the court to make that decision. We're here. Why not make the decision?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Mr. Bean, you were appointed by the court to represent Mr. Ganier, and we are grateful for your assistance.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We were also grateful to Ropes and Gray for taking this case pro bono. Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted.
Case number